I learned a long time ago that happiness was a choice. And I exercised that as a truth in my life.
Welcome back to another episode of The Ginny Show. I'm so happy to have your company here with me today. While you're tuning in, please don't forget to subscribe, rate, or review. I'd love to hear what you think of the show and what I can do better to provide you with the value that you need to live your happiest life. That's the thing about happiness as well. It just takes a number of steps to get to that state. And once we train our minds, our habits, and our thoughts, we can actually cultivate happiness a lot more easily and gracefully than we did before. Now, that's not to say we can be happy 20% of the time or we can be happy 100% of the time, but we can choose to be happy. And that is one of the most powerful things that you can walk away with and one of the most powerful things that you can know. Happiness really is a choice. And it can start with the cornerstone of gratitude, that very practice that anchors you into the present and anchors you onto the path of happiness. So here's my next guest, coach and author, David Neagle. Mr. David Neagle, welcome to The Ginny Show. I'm really excited to have you on here. There's so much I want to talk to you about, but I just kind of want to go straight into some of the questions that I had for you. I guess the first one is, tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, what's happened for you in the last 5 years.
I am a coach and I help people build businesses, mostly work with entrepreneurs, but I do work with companies also. I came from a background where in order for me to be productive in life, it required transformation. Let's put it that way. I was a high school dropout. I had a series of experiences that really led me on a path of self-study. So I had a near-death experience back in 1989, and then shortly after that, a real emotional breakdown at work. I was a forklift driver, and I just was not able to make life work. It just wasn't working for me. I couldn't pay my bills on time. I was working 6.5 days a week. I was married. I had 2 children. So I found myself in a place where I had a tremendous amount of responsibility and didn't know how to meet that responsibility. So through a kind of an experiment, if you will, everything started to change for me very rapidly. So I had this experience where I was exhausted. I was crying. I had been reprimanded at work. And I was in the back of this trailer and I was really trying to figure out, I was like, God, please help me find a way out of this situation.
Right.
And a voice in my head said, change. So I started thinking to myself, I wonder what that means, change my attitude. Like, what is an attitude? I really started contemplating it very seriously because nothing else made any sense. I mean, there was no internet. There was no way for me to go back to school. I didn't have any money. So I did. I changed 3 things. I isolated 3 things in my behavior and the way that I was showing up in the world. And I changed those 3 things. And those 3 things were loving what I did. So I showed up acting like I loved what I did every day, doing everything to the best of my ability. And the 3rd one was treating everyone with total respect. And in 30 days, my income tripled.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a big wow. It was a very big wow because I was so astounded that this happened. I thought, this is not luck. I did something that caused this to happen. I had never done anything like that before. And then, what it did was, it put me on this path of trying to find out, how did that happen? How did that actually take place? So that road started around 1993. I was in a place where I was studying from other people and I had mentors and was going to seminars and all that kind of stuff, read all the great books. And in the year 2000, I started my own company because I was coaching people kind of on the side and they were getting great results. So I started my own business doing that. And I've been doing that ever since.
It's awesome to hear you share your story. I mean, there's so many golden nuggets there, which we can kind of look at and rinse off. It's the Australian in me coming out looking for the gold, looking for this. But I love the fact that what you talked about was a deep change. There's a few kind of, I guess, mindset tools that you presented there. One was obviously a change in attitude, which brought about a change in perspective. And you also anchored gratitude too, when it comes to being present. I guess that kind of emanated throughout the rest of your life. Those little slight shifts that you made, obviously you're in a job that you said that you weren't really fulfilled in. You just come out of a near-death experience.
When it comes to someone's journey in their life, do you think there needs to be some form of a rock bottom or a close to rock bottom moment for these things to transpire?
Well, here's the thing. This is a really good question because the evidence would suggest that that's a very true statement.
Right.
However, what I have noticed in my own work over the last 20 years is that if you reach a person at the right place that's not rock bottom, and you can get them to kind of intellectually accept their own desire to move forward in life, that they can actually effectively make a change before they actually hit rock bottom. But if they're left to their own devices, generally what you're saying is actually very true. And what's unfortunate about that is that we're usually not in a good intellectual or emotional space to change it once we get there. So a lot of people don't come out of that kind of dark night of the soul, so to speak.
So you're a coach for a living too. I know you coach a lot of entrepreneurs and that kind of thing to kind of excel in their business and their life. My question to you is, as a coach too, do you find that people who are kind of looking for that, you know, kind of looking at yourself and saying, these are the things I want to improve, these are the things I want to change, is not a particularly easy thing to do. And I think a lot of people are kind of resistant to that purely for the fact of when you look at yourself, sometimes it's hard to accept certain things about yourself. In your experience, David, what would you say are some resistances that you found to be common when people are trying to change their attitude?
So, number one, I completely agree with you.
Yep.
It's very difficult for people to do that. And I think that the resistances usually are around anything that they have shame and guilt wrapped around. Those seem to be the toughest.
Wow.
And it's fascinating because in almost every culture around the world, there's a level of shame and guilt that we're raised with. But it's not something that we're born with. It's something that really fascinates me. If you can help a person become liberated from their own shame and guilt, or at least self-regulating with it so that it's not like they're not like self-abusing themselves with it or keeping themselves paralyzed or in a total state of procrastination or self-loathing around it, and get them to accept the great things that whatever it is they have shame and guilt wrapped around actually present in their life so they're cognizant of it, it does change their perception and they can see the way out of a dark place, or they can start to see the greatness that lies inside of themselves. But it is definitely the things that are in shame and guilt that prevent a person from moving forward, because they're tough to look at first. They're really tough. So I do a lot of education around that so that it makes it easier for them to look at it.
I like how you said that, you know, shame and guilt seems to be a universal problem no matter where you are, you know, in the world. And it's not something that we are born with. It's something that, you know, we form as we grow up and as we experience things. I'm curious to know too, David, just kind of what are your kind of personal routines that you have to kind of keep yourself, I guess, centered and able to kind of really find that clarity for your clientele?
Well, one of the things that I did a long time ago, and I credit my mentor for having actually made this statement, but it was something that really resonated with me when he said this. I was in an audience, a few thousand people, and he was talking, and he said, you know, really, what we should do is do a real good examination of the way that we want to live and ask ourselves, if everybody was to know about that, would you be okay with it? And if not, it's probably better that you don't choose that thing, whatever it might be. And that can go from, I mean, normally when I say that, people think about like the sexual part of their lives or something, right, which that can definitely be true. But it can also be like, do I really want to stand up and stand for something in my life and be seen by others as having an opinion on something? Do I want to go against the values of my family and dare to be different in that area? These types of things. So I decided, like, okay, and I'm going to do it in a way where I'm very proud of the way that I live my life and the thing list about my shortcomings, and I'm not embarrassed about those, or nor do I try to hide them in any way. It gives me complete freedom in the work that I do to be able to work with other people, because I can show up completely authentic. I don't have anything to hide. And I'm not presenting myself as something that is morally or ethically superior in any way to anybody else, just that I have some ideas and ways of viewing things and education to offer that will allow a person to transform basically whatever it is they want to transform.
Wow. I like how you mentioned about, you know, showing up authentically, because again, it can be scary for some people to do that because we have, you know, preconceived judgments about ourselves and how we see ourselves in a filtered way and how we see the world as well. David, what are some of the morning routines that you have to get your day started? I'm curious to know, like, how someone who shows up authentically like you do, what do you do in the morning to get you ready for the day to kind of set the tone?
So what I do in the morning is, once I'm fully awake, get a cup of coffee or whatever, I'll sit down and go through, open up my computer, go through my calendar for the day. And I'll look at everything that has to be done that day. And I ask myself the question, how do I want to show up for this? Who do I want to be in this situation? So I'm really kind of pre-thinking everything that happens. Now, I mean, everybody has a day that's probably pretty full, and we can only predict the way that we can show up for the things that we know that are going to be there. We probably all have things that happen unexpectedly throughout the day. And I kind of give that some thought too. Like, what if something doesn't go right? Mm. How do I want to show up for that? But one of the things that I also did a long time ago was I thought to myself, I really want to make sure that I'm coming from a place of always adding value to other people's lives. But I want to make it really, like, really ingrained into who I am as a person, almost to the place of where it's so automatic, I don't even need to think about it. It's that type of integration into my personality. So I thought, what would that do? One is really looking at every person that I come in contact with and asking, how can I help this person? Or how can I add value to this person's life? Which is a challenge because it's easy to do with people that you're planning on engaging, but it's not always easy to just engaging randomly out in the world with the average individual and not knowing how they're going to show up in life. So there's that. And then the other one is that with everything that happens in my life throughout the day, I'm going to ask myself this question, what is the truth in this? Mm. So that I am, instead of coming from a reactive place, or a place where I get emotionally triggered, or I draw some erratic or crazy conclusion about something, I'm really looking at everything and saying, what is the truth in it, so that I can be as productive with whatever happens as possible. Now, I'm first to say that I'm not perfect at that. But even if I do get triggered with something emotionally throughout the day, I'm able to get myself back on track with it fast enough so that I don't spiral like for days about something that maybe I made a mistake or something negative happened in the business or something happened in my personal life that didn't go well, and where it doesn't actually keep me down for a long period of time, because I want to be looking for, where do I need to grow in this situation? What did I do? How did I participate in causing this to happen? Accepting responsibility for, you know, at the very least, my participation in it and completely caused it to happen. And what is the solution? How can we make this better? How can we look for the positive outcome in that? You know, of course, what has to change in order for that to happen? So that's generally what I go through, you know, every single morning. I don't even need to have to make myself anything that I automatically do every day.
You've mentioned so many awesome things there, David. I kind of don't know which one to pick, but you talked about, you know, I've interviewing different entrepreneurs and successful entrepreneurs and people in their life. I've noticed a common theme of them setting an intention for the day of how to bring value to people's life or how to help. There is that element of service or wanting to kind of, you know, contribute or give in the want of a sensible word. So you want to kind of be open to giving, or that kind of flow of energy, let's just say. And another thing that you mentioned there, which I think falls into that category of judgment with people, I find that, you know, humans nowadays, when we try to embark on a new journey to excel or be a little bit better, we get quite critical and caught up in the judgment, which comes from our ego, that when we don't succeed, like, for example, you were saying that sometimes, you know, even though you intend to see the truth of something and you may get emotional, you still bounce back and you still keep going. And I kind of call it stumbling through life. Like, I tend to stumble a lot, but in my stumbling, I'm moving forward. Why do you think it is, in what you've observed in people, is it the shame and guilt thing again, that you think that people kind of revert back to their old habits?
I do think it's shame and guilt. I think that people go through a terrible process internally when they make a mistake or the outcome that they want for themselves doesn't happen the way that it is. You know, one of the things that coaches seem to know pretty readily, and so do people in the psychiatric field, is that people have an over-dependent need of approval from their counterparts in life, whether it's people that they're working with, their spouse, or, you know, whatever. We're always seeking approval to the point where it becomes extremely dysfunctional. If we're always seeking approval, if that is like the value system that is propelling us forward in life, then it becomes very difficult to deal with something that we think somebody would disapprove of. So that's where you get odd behaviors like people keeping secrets or people covering up their mistakes or not looking at their mistakes truthfully. We're having tough conversations with individuals. Sometimes it's that we need to be confrontational in a conversation and talk about things that are very difficult. When that happens, it is the shame and guilt. It's the there is one other thing that I think plays a big role, and that's the fear of abandonment.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things that doesn't get discussed as much because, you know, it has different connotations to it. But I think definitely that feeling of being judged and left alone, out cold in the world, definitely does play a part in how people interact. I'm curious also too, you know, you talked about the human need to seek approval, and I think that kind of comes in time. It's kind of embedded in who we are. I don't think you have a problem saying no to people because I think you can express it empoweredly, but do you have any tips for our audience if they have trouble saying no to people or asserting boundaries in fear of being disapproved or in fear of being judged? Do you have any tips of how they can say no to people or draw boundaries in that way?
Well, I think one of the problems that a person's facing if they're suffering from that is that they always have to get themselves to try to do something that's extremely uncomfortable to do, which pretty much indicates that they're not going to do it well or do it as often as they need to, or maybe in places where they need to do it the most, you know, like maybe in personal relationships or things that directly really impact their life. So I come from the place of, you know, coming from the place of asking them, what are they resisting in adopting no as a positive behavior in their life? Why are they resisting that so much? And then really listening very close to what the answer is and then helping them process through that so that they can really set a new standard for their life. Because if you think about it, if we have that as a problem, that's a toleration. That's something we're tolerating in our life.
Right.
So the ramifications or the implications that presents can be quite tragic for an individual. If you think about people that are stuck in abusive or toxic relationships, part of the reason for that is their inability to say no. And then to say no turns into an ignorance or denial about what they're actually experiencing. And when that happens, we're really in trouble because now we begin to lose our sense of judgment for ourselves to be able to navigate our way to stay healthy and happy and, you know, in productive relationships with other people. So I always start off by asking, what are they resisting? And then working through that with them.
Geez, no, it's like a two-letter word, but it has such an impact on people, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
Wow. And Oprah said no is a full sentence and, you know, till humanity gets to that way, it's kind of hard to process. I also find too, David, that when you say no to people, and I think Oprah did say this as well, that when you say no to people, if they continue to enforce their agenda onto you, even after you've clearly said no, it's a method of trying to control you. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, absolutely. It's tyranny at that point. There's no question about it. It's not okay. And an individual needs to understand that it is not okay. That's why it's so important. Like, your question is such a great question because it sets people free. The ability to say no and to stand for whatever it is that you believe in is so needed, and it's so needed in our world right now. But I also think that people need to understand where it comes from, because it's not just a psychological weakness. There's actually a biological reason that this takes place, and that comes from the need for approval when we're infants. See, when we're infants, at the most vulnerable part of our life, if we don't have that approval, if mom or dad walk away from us, we physically die. So it comes from a very real place of needing to have approval. And we're born into the world not linguistically being able to communicate it. You know, at least we have to figure out how to communicate with mom and dad. So it is the way that they show up that kind of programs us to whether we're secure or insecure. If we have erratic parents and they're not showing healthy patterns in their life, then we end up adapting to that in a way where we show up to the world kind of manipulative because we're always afraid of what's going to happen. So we always try to bend things to our favor. And that can be severe or it can be mild, but what it does do is it sets us up for a place of not really knowing and understanding ourselves and being able to set a boundary for how we want to experience the world ourselves.
It's kind of circling back to what we kind of originally started off talking about, David, like, you know, really unpacking that childhood mentality can be quite scary when we have to look at how our parents treated us and kind of accept some truths.
Absolutely. And the other thing that I think that's fascinating about it is we're the only form of life that has to do it.
Yeah. Well, humans are the only living species on Earth who actually have the power of choice, right? Like a lion will walk down Fifth Avenue and if it's hungry, it'll eat a person and not think twice about it. There'll be no remorse or no confession that the lion has to go through. But if it was a human, you know, going down there and something, you know, tragic like that were to happen, we have that power of choice. And then we have the guilt and the consequences that come after that. So it's such an interesting thing that humans have so much power that we add to our choices and our actions that sometimes we realize there's another side or another option as well. It's not the only option that we have.
We're also the only form of life that gets judged for that choice.
Yeah.
If the lion eats something in the wild, we don't say it's evil. But if a human being does something mean to someone else, we consider that evil.
That's so true. We've kind of got the two sides of the coin, I guess, you know, the power of choice and also the power to judge those choices too as a collective. David, to steer the conversation to kind of what the Ginny Show is about, obviously to give you tools on the pathway to, you know, achieving your own form of happiness, I'm going to ask you a loaded question and, you know, you can kind of make this answer as trivial or as impactful or profound as you like. What is your own personal definition of happiness?
Well, that's an interesting question because, and I know that there's people that disagree with this, so I always find it interesting, but I just tell you what works for me. I learned a long time ago that happiness was a choice, and I exercised that as a truth in my life. So I decided that, number one, I was going to choose to be happy, but not like from a Pollyanna perspective where like, oh, everything is just love and roses and,
right,
you know, that type of thing, but also coming from the place of there, if there's something in my life that I'm not happy with or that is not adding to my happiness, that in order to make me happy, I will choose to change that thing, that I have the power to do that. And I'm not going to tolerate something in my life that's not worthy. So that's how I usually show up when it comes to being happy. I'm actually a pretty happy person. It doesn't mean I don't get sad. It doesn't mean I don't grieve if I lose something. It doesn't mean that I don't have days where I might feel a little down, but there's one other thing that I do that is very important to me. And that's that in order for me to stay happy, I am profoundly grateful for my life because I remember what it was like not to be happy and also to feel very disempowered about doing anything about it. And I went through that period of time for a long period of time in my childhood and my early adult life, to have stumbled upon something that helped me change and then meet other people that would then assist me in my growth as I went along and then be able to do what I've done for 20 years. There's not much in my life that can go wrong where I'm not absolutely grateful for all of it because I know where I was and I know where I could have been had I not made other choices. So that really keeps me very happy. It also puts things in, for me, it does anyway, it puts things in their proper perspective, you know, in life.
It's fascinating to me too, because gratitude seems to really be the vehicle to, one, give you perspective and also truly anchor you into the present, to really be aware of like everything. Like the other day when I was doing my gratitude practice, I'm grateful for all my senses. And, you know, I complain about running because, you know, cardio is not my strength, David. But, you know, think about people who don't have the power to put their feet on the floor or feel their legs. You know, they would love to just run. So, you know, I think when it comes to happiness, I do think gratitude needs to be in the recipe. Would you agree?
I absolutely agree with you. I just don't know how somebody could be authentically happy without it.
Exactly.
Because here's the thing. If gratitude's not there, then what is?
Yeah.
And in most cases, it's resentment. So if a person's resentful, they're not happy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would actually kind of say resentment's probably the shadow of gratitude too, because resentment kind of blocks you from being in the present and also, you know, opening you up to all the gifts and gold around you.
I agree. Absolutely agree.
Fantastic. Well, David, this has been an amazing conversation. So I thank you for your time and the value that you've provided. There's been so much wisdom that you've jam-packed into this 30-minute conversation. But just to finish up, I'd love to know, David, because, you know, you're clearly a very intentional guy. You set out to be purposeful and you have a vision and authenticity that you want to bring into your day and other people's life. I'm curious to know who your inner circle is. Who are the five people that you spend the most time with, and use one word to describe them?
The people that I spend the most time with, I think, are they're the most unbelievably grateful people I've ever met. It's an interesting question because I'm thinking to myself, well, there's a lot of ways that I could describe them. They're forward thinking, they're hardworking, they're ethical individuals, they care about people, but they're also, it's funny because I just spent a week with these people.
Right.
And so grateful for their life and what they get to do. I think at least currently right now, that's the way that I would describe them. They're immensely grateful for life. And they're in a way where everything that they do shows the appreciation of that.
It's interesting that you said all those things about those people. And the reason why I asked that question at the end is because, you know, how they say the five people that you spend the most time with, you're the sum of that. I think everything that you've used to describe them is what I'd use to describe you in the 30 minutes that I've chatted to you. So thank you very much, David, for sharing your wisdom with us. Tell the good people of The Ginny Show where we can find you.
My website, davidnagel.com. There's a download there called You Were Born to Be a Success. It doesn't cost anything, and you can download it and read it, and hopefully it makes an impact in your life. And thank you so much for having me on the show. It was really a pleasure and honor to be here.
Thank you very much, David. Really appreciate having you on the show. The Ginny Show. Oh.
I think it will be fun. Come on, hello. Like when you are.